pledging the same collateral twice is a fraud. Until Tricolor, nobody got caught. What made Fifth Third Bank do the auditing on Tricolor? Something must have spooked them. 30,000 cars are missing. They drove the car away and went into Mexico. Charge-offs are increasing. Delinquencies are increasing. The second when the student loan delinquencies were reported to the credit agencies, that's game over.
What's up, guys? I'm Nobody Special, and I am very excited today because we have Lax Ganapathy, the founder and CEO of Unicus Research, is with us today. We are going to talk about some recent high-profile bankruptcies in the auto space and something really rotten that is going on under the hood, pun totally intended, in the auto ABS sector. Rampant fraud, rampant abuse, auditors, rating agencies, analysts asleep at the wheel, the whole nine yards here. Lax, thank you so much for joining us here. And how are you doing today?
Thank you for having me, Jack. Today I'm doing good. I'm running on little sleep because too many information's coming at me. It's hard to stay on top of everything. So I'm hanging in there. How are you?
I'm doing great. And I've been meaning to do this interview for weeks now. I've been watching this space and we've been kind of talking offline for months.
Yes.
And then the Tricolor story hit. And this really picked my curiosity because when I first got wind of Tricolor, I sent you a text and I mentioned the double pledging of collateral and the possibility of fraud there. And I remember your response. It was, you know, to quote it a little bit, you summarize it as everybody's doing this. You said like everybody in the space does it, the multiple pledging of collateral. And I remember reading that and saying, whoa, you know, what's going on here? So let me just share my screen here a little bit and show you some of these stories, right? We had this story back in early September. Subprime lender Tricolor goes under investigation amid fraud investigation. They filed for bankruptcy. It looked like Subprime was borrowing against their loans, but they were doing it several times at multiple different banks. And then you tell me everybody's doing it. And that's very interesting because just a few weeks later, we get this one in the Financial Times. First Brand's bankruptcy probe examines if invoices were pledged multiple times. Now, First Brands is not a car dealer. They sell parts. Yeah. And this kind of gets into factoring where they're borrowing against receivables, like bills from their customers.
Yes.
But it does rhyme, doesn't it? The multiple pledging. So I have to ask, what made you just casually say everybody does this as if like, you know, oh, yeah, you know, it's just a little fraud. Everybody does it. No big deal. I mean, you didn't make it sound like no big deal, but it almost sounded like it's common knowledge that this happens. Can't be right.
Well, auto industry auto sector is a very interesting space. It's very tightly knitted and everybody knows everybody. And there are so many moving variables. And we heard over the years, we've been following auto industry for 3 years. And over the 3 years, we've been speaking with auction houses, dealers, wholesalers, and all of the people who are involved in day-to-day activities of repossessions and buying and selling. And what we have been hearing anecdotally, I'm like, yeah, double pledging, everybody does it. So, and our question was, so what do the auditors do? Because pledging the same collateral twice and selling the same loan twice, it's a fraud. It's a explicit fraud. And until Tricolor, at least for this year, nobody got caught, as far as I know, by doing double pledging. And when Tricolor happened, everybody started to say, and when I read the news, my first question was, what made Fifth Third Bank do the auditing on Tricolor? Tricolor's pool of loans. Something must have spooked them. And I haven't found the answer to that yet because, you know, this is a high profile. Everybody is hush hush. But one way, there are a couple of ways to find if a pool of loans is double pledged, right? One is the bank who is servicing or dealing with the loans. They find the need to audit the loans. They need vehicle identification number or VIN number to corroborate with the respective loans. They have to check the title deed and all of those things to make sure double pledging did not happen in the pool of loan. The other way to do it is if we have access or anybody access VIN numbers, then we can use the pool of loans that's being filed in the ABS and with the SEC. We can use that to corroborate it, but it's not available. The reason is because of Privacy Act and everything. So technically, since these are all backed by collateral, it is wise to do it every quarter to fair market value, and see whether the value of the collateral has deteriorated, whether any double pledging is involved in that pool of loans. It has to be done. In paper, if you go to SEC, you can see under 15G, where auditors like Grant Thornton signed off saying that, hey, you know, everything is fine, everything is peachy, nothing to worry about. But what gets interesting is they do auditing on double pledging, but they do not do auditing on the entire pool of loans. They take a sample. So they check all the marks so nobody notices it because it's been audited and signed off by the auditor, but the fraud is there.
So it's interesting. If I'm paraphrasing correctly here, the auditor is the only one who can spot this. There is no independent mechanism beyond auditors, because the VIN numbers are private and there's no other data to check if this collateral has been double pledged.
Yes.
Now, so we've got two cases here, Tricolor.
Yeah.
They double pledged their collateral. Their auditor, Grant Thornton, missed it. We were talking before we went live here. Grant Thornton is also the auditor of a rather prominent auto company that mysteriously the stock just seems to be doing phenomenal. I'll just go ahead and say it. Let's not Carvana. Be cool about it. Carvana. Grant Thornton audits Carvana, same auditor who missed the double pledging of collateral in Tricolor. That doesn't mean Carvana is doing anything.
Oh, no, it exactly means that anecdotally, a lot of sources have said that, and people, we do not, in full disclaimer, recommend Carvana as a short or a long, but we have heard anecdotally from some people that that's widespread in the industry.
Yeah. And Carvana heavily reliant on the ABS market to keep their liquidity, keep their loans flowing. You know, one of the other companies that we mentioned here, First Brands, who also just went bankrupt, and it looks like they were double pledging collateral, or at least they suspect their auditor is BDO. That's an auditing firm that is on my radar because they're the ones who signed off on Super Microcomputer's books. And they basically signed off on the books while saying we can't guarantee they're not doing fraud. And then that supposedly was enough to like put the whole accounting fraud at Super Micro story to bed, even though BDO signed off on the books while saying there's still existential crisis with their internal controls. So auditors is really our only safeguard here. And there's questions about how thorough the auditors are being.
I wanted to, if I can, say the difference between Tricolor and First Brands. So Tricolor, from the consumer point of view, they sold the loan to asset-backed securities backed by the collateral, the autos. Right. And the difference with First Brands is, yes, it involves ABS, but it's invoice factoring and it's from the supplier side and it's supplier financing. And the difference with that is invoice factoring is very common when it comes in the auto parts sector. The reason is you sell a product and say, let's say it's $100 and with the 30, 60 or 90 day terms, but you want cash for that invoice right away. So you sell them to a factor who then gives you the cash right away for $100, say he gives $80 to you, right? And he keeps $20. And when the invoice is due and it gets paid, the factor keeps the money and dispatches the rest, to keep some to him and dispatches the rest to you. So this is using the invoice as a collateral. So this is the difference between asset-backed securities and asset-backed lending. Asset-backed security, you sell the loans and put it in the off the balance sheet. And as the consumers pay off the loans, it amortizes. And it has its own headache because then there is modifications that the banks engage in. And then the charge-offs are increasing, which will be absorbed by the reserve it has in the pool. So that has its own securitization layering and all the confusions. Asset-backed lending is a different animal. I just wanted to clarify that.
I appreciate that. So it's a similar failure mode, the double pledging of collateral and the fraud involved, although the collateral itself, very different, just happens to be in the same sector. So there's some common threads there, but these are two different stories. Yes. It's also worth pointing out, I think, that you've got the intersection with some pretty radical policy changes involved here, right? Tricolor was predominantly focused on lending to undocumented immigrants, right? The name Tricolor is derived from the three colors of the Mexican flag. So we've got mass deportations. If somebody gets deported and their car is still in the States, they're not going to be making payments on those loans.
Oh, that's where there is clarity from some of our sources. So the people who wants the money back, now there is a bankruptcy. 30,000 cars are missing. That's because, according to our sources, the illegal immigrants or Hispanics who are legal, whatever, that, let's forget the fine-tuned wordings, but they drove the car away and went into Mexico. They took the car with them. So 30,000 cars, roughly estimated $1 billion worth, is out. No one can find it. The word is it's crossed the border.
So they self-deported, they took the collateral with them, stopped making the payments, Tricolor goes belly up. Now, the other policy intersection I was going to reference was with First Brands. You know, they focus in parts, not loans, but auto parts is a sector that is disproportionately vulnerable to tariffs. And I don't know that tariffs is playing a role with First Brands, but I do know that we have had a sudden shift in policy affecting that industry. And companies engaged in fraud would be the first to fail when the tide shifts like that. So, you know, it's possible some of these policy choices happening in Washington are contributing to the failure of companies that are failing because of fraud, but it's been aggravated by this change in policy.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, top 10 U.S. aftermarket supplier with household brands like FRAM, Trico, Anco, Autolite, Carter, and they all entered Chapter 11 after years of aggressive, opaque working capital finance. And, you know, this First Brand filings, right, from our research indicates it's going to, the ripple effect is going to impact across the retail channels like AutoZone, O'Reilly, GPC, and eventually the OEMs like Stellantis, GM. And this is not just First Brands incident. And that's what I've been talking about. This is not just First Brands. This is not just Tricolor. It can appear as an isolated incident, but they are all connected. So there is a contagion, and that does not mean that everybody is going to go bankrupt tomorrow and the Armageddon is coming. I'm not saying that. When I say it's contagion, it means when these two started to happen within a month, every single bank, every single lender that are doing more or less exactly the same thing will start to clean up their act. And that's when we will see more cracks, because consumers are at the center of everything. They stop paying the bills. They stop paying the car loans. Eventually, we are seeing spike in charge-offs, delinquencies. You can't modify anymore because a modification has been kicked down the road. The vintages in 2022 on asset-backed securities, we are seeing that's deteriorating, which means a fancy word for consumers stop paying the loan, which means the trust is not getting enough money, which means the reserve account that gets absorbed. Eventually, the P&L is going to completely drain and it will impact the earnings per share of the company. And as you can see, CarMax recently reported and they started, as we have speculated, increasing their provision for credit losses. And third quarter, we suggest all the investors to focus on and sit on every single bank conference calls, auto lenders conference calls, because they're all going to talk about it. They're all going to increase your provision for credit losses.
So that's an interesting segue. We have up on the screen here the recent headline from CarMax earnings. You know, the stock cratered on this news. Now, there was a lot of talk about CarMax, about Carvana taking market share from them. And you had some interesting things to say on Twitter here. By the way, I have no position in any of these companies that we're talking about today. I just want to clarify that. But what we're talking about here, we know for sure that Carvana is taking share from CarMax using the ticker symbols there. Now you say our analysis in the ABS market echoes that both ABS pools are rotten, scheduled to publish to your clients later this week. Now that was about a week ago. I know you sell your research to your clients, so I don't want to like tread too much in here, but could you give us a preview? That's some pretty strong language there. Both ABS pools are rotten. Talking about CarMax and Carvana, what makes you say that?
So when I say CarMax, Carvana is taking market share away from CarMax, we are hearing that from some credible sources in the industry. Carvana, no matter how many people can despise the company, one thing that they have it going for them is them buying ADESA, which is an auction company. So they have this vertical integration model. So they can buy the car, they can buy it from the auction, they can, you know, they can make money over there with some arbitrage, and then they can use the car, they can lease the car, and they buy the car from consumers for cash and then reservice the car or put it back into the auction. So they can do so many things. So their business model is no longer relying just on selling the cars and making money. So that is why Carvana is taking market share from these small dealers like CarMax, CarMart. But if you look at the asset-backed securities side, CarMax, we are currently working on that. We finished the Carvana and Ally. Some of your listeners can go to our website to check it out, newsletter to check it out. But when you look into the asset-backed securities for these auto sector, it's just that if they originate, say, 10, 20,000 loans in a month, let's say, for example, so instead of keeping those loans in the books, CarMax, Carvana, or anybody else, bundle these loans and sell them. They then, when the consumer pays the loan, it amortizes itself and the value of the asset-backed security slowly goes down over the years. Technically, you know, everything should work smooth. But there are multiple problems in asset-backed securities because we can't see whether the loan is modified, meaning we have been hearing from the industry that when the pandemic happened, everybody had stimulus money, and then they no longer have the stimulus money. So in that case, they don't want to pay for the Maserati that they bought at a cheaper interest rate. They wanted to repo the car. They go to the bank. Banks apparently mentioning that, oh, we don't want to take your car. You can stay in your car, but tell us how much you can pay every month. So if you can't pay $500 a month because your student loan is kicking in, tell me if you can pay $100 a month. I can make adjustments. And instead of, say, 12-month loan, we can make it as 24-month loan. So that's the modification. So we are seeing, we saw a rapid increase in the modifications from 2021 when the pool started, and then all the way to 200 days in modifications, 250 days in modifications. These are not absolute numbers. It does not mean that their loan is moved 200 days. There is a technicality and the math behind it. I'm happy to explain it, but the modifications have been increasing. Then you will see that the banks is adjusting them, the loans, to be current. So it's not, once it's modified, it's current. It's not 30-day delinquent anymore or 60-day delinquent anymore. So all those vintages right now, we are seeing those pools are deteriorating. Charge-offs are increasing. Delinquencies are increasing. And when that happens, there is a reserve account inside each pool based on whether the pool comprises majority of subprime or prime. But that's a whole new discussion because 702 credit score is no longer prime. It's a subprime. Anybody who says otherwise, they're happy to chat with me. But, you know, when those loans go bad, it gets absorbed in the pool, in the reserve account. To simplify things, when that happens, any money that is coming in goes to refill the reserve account that's already gone down because there were charge-offs. So there are clients who are paying it on time. Their money goes back into the pool to refill the reserve. It does not go to the equity, which is residual interest. So as this getting very, very starved, asset-backed securities, every pool is getting starved, the deterioration in the earnings per share on the equity side, we have been tracking. When you add the 2022 pool, first trust, second trust, from that year to all the way to 2025, we keep tracking them, and we can say, all right, 3 cents, 5 cents per share, equity per share, 4 cents per equity per share per pool. And if you add them all together and stack them up, it's pretty decent impact to the earnings per share for Carvana and CarMax. So you won't see the pain right now, but well into mid-2026, you will start seeing them.
So I want to then move on to another. Again, your Twitter feed at Unicus Research on X has been excellent lately on this topic. You've been all over auto ABS for months. You had an interesting thing to say here in response to this tweet from Dave Wright. Dave is talking about a move that'll surprise absolutely nobody. Sell side analysts at places like Jefferies keep pumping Carvana with buy ratings and laughable price targets. Again, guys, I have no horse in this race. This is just what's out there. And then you have an interesting response here. You say, during the months leading up to Enron's collapse, almost all sell-side analysts had a buy rating on the company, including multiple analysts from major firms like Credit Suisse, who went bye-bye, First Boston, Lehman Brothers, J.P. Morgan, Salomon, Smith & Barney. All these analysts from firms who are also coincidentally losing hundreds of millions in these frauds at Tricolor. You don't have a lot of faith in these analyst notes, do you?
No. I mean, we are an independent analyst for a reason, and we do not trade on our ideas, and because that keeps us objective and not delusional. And, you know, listen, there are a lot of stories where sell-side analysts doing this because of the fear of getting fired and other things. The system is broken. It's a whole different conversation. But no, I don't have faith on sell-side analyst who goes and says, oh, it's upgrade. Okay, for what? Upgrade because why? And it goes to the point where fundamental research is almost dead. I get that, but what I don't get is common sense dead too, because you have Tricolor, you have First Brands, the underlying issue is the collateral in the asset-backed securities, and people keep upgrading the stock. So it's either because of fear, or fear of getting fired, fear of blackballed, but you know that is not fair to the investors who rely on these news medias to invest their retirement or whatever they are doing.
You know, I've had my own run-ins with these sell-side analysts. I did a lot of work a few years ago on a separate topic we don't need to bring in, but you know, the financial press goes to this sell-side analyst who debunks my research and says, don't listen to this guy. All the financial media picks up that debunking article that didn't address any of the issues in my research. They repeat it and they, you know, they're stock salesmen. That's ultimately what these people are. That's why we say sell side research. Their job is to sell stock. They want your money. Yeah. And the financial press brings these guys on the air without ever giving the other side, without ever giving airtime to research like yours that says, hey, something stinks in these loan pools.
It's funny you say that. It's funny you say that because CNBC recently had us on and we talked about off the screen, we talked about all of, I was saying about all of this and they were like, we have no idea. And I'm like, yeah. And listen, it's the mainstream media, sell side analyst. It's funny because car dealership guy who's been phenomenon in this industry. I have respect for everybody who works in this industry because, you know, they do their own work. But somebody pointed out to me this morning, hey, Lux, you've been at it for so long. And look, car dealership did the same thing. So I screenshotted it and said, oh, it's cute that finally everybody is catching up. And I mean it. I'm not offended that anybody is copying. But the point is, I think more people should copy because so they will have the guts to come out and talk about, well, what the mainstream media is saying is wrong and this is the fact and these are the numbers to corroborate it. And we don't have it. And especially now, Jack, more than ever, retail investors are everywhere. Institutional investors used to be investing in the market and they do that. They have the army, so to speak, in terms of legal, financial at their disposal to get all the information that they need. But when the retail crowd is getting into investing, it is disgraceful for anybody to come out and say, oh, this is great, you should buy it. Or, you know, everything is great and there is no problem. You can't say it. It's very disgraceful because retail investors investing whatever money that they have at their disposal to catch up with the institution or whatever the intention is, they don't have the resources to spend on the research to understand before they invest. And, you know, sell-side analysts, in my humble opinion, need to do a better job at capturing the reality.
Well said. And if I might add, I would say it is perfectly acceptable and even encouraged to copy with attribution. I would put that little asterisk on there, right? Yeah. Doesn't hurt to say, hey, Unicus Research has been all over this for months and now I'm repeating what she's saying. It doesn't take much effort to do that. Many people do it though, do they?
Yeah. Listen, those are all their personal moral compass or whatever, but it's nice that people realize that we have been at it for so long. What it keeps me up at night is that not only institutional investors with so much resources at their disposal still get blindsided by whatever is happening, and retail investors just listen to the sell side and, you know, have trouble.
That's why I'm increasingly using the catchphrase, nobody saw this coming. Hint, wink, wink. Yeah, nobody saw this coming. You're damn right he did. Yeah. All right, another thread I wanted to pull on here is contagion risk. And once again, your Twitter feed has been excellent recently. Now, you're talking here about four regional banks that you're recommending as a short. We don't need to get into specific names here, but you're calling out here auto lending, consumer credit, asset-backed securities are all weaved together, and the mess is in the banks on and off balance sheet. So there's a few things I'd like you to elaborate on a little bit here. You can mention some of the banks specifically if you want to or not. All weaved together on and off the balance sheet. That's kind of interesting. How might problems in the auto ABS sector and these double pledging of collateral, how would that hide off balance sheet? What does that look like? And how big is this problem? How much contagion risk are we talking about?
We started tracking the auto sector 3 years ago. We started off with Ally, and we started off with auto, and then we tracked to, okay, so auto is giving to consumers. Then we like weaved into, okay, here's the credit score, which we can rely on. And we spoke with a senior analyst at credit rating agencies who either are clueless or don't want to talk about it. Then we went on our own mission to speak with all the sources in the industry. And what they are saying to us is not matching with what we are reading in the news. And that led us to poke into the banks. So 2007, 2008, let's take it for example. I'm not going to get into detail. But during that time, there was this notion, don't ask, don't tell, right? Zero down. I don't care, you know, as long as if you can pay me $5 a month and keep the car, go ahead. And I will just kick the can down the road in modification and mark the loan as current. So my book is clear. And I don't want to be the first one to blow the whistle. And that's why I was surprised when Fifth Third came out and said, there is a problem. And I'm curious what spooked the Fifth Third Bank to audit the pool of loans and flag this, because are they trying to get ahead of this mess so they can be clean? So this is going to, this opened a can of worms, and everybody is going to talk about it. Auditors, you know, might do their job finally, but there are banks who lend money to people. There are banks who lend money to auto dealers that they should not have. Auto dealers, some dealerships are shutting down and it's not captured in the news. Some sources continues to say us that banks go to some nameless dealerships, say, give me your keys. You're not paying the floor plan. You have to give me all your cars. And guys from auction houses are saying, oh, we are not seeing many banks come in anymore because they don't want it to sell it at a price that the buyers are asking. So that's a standstill. So they're all holding the cars, not selling them because nobody wants to buy them at the price they are offering. Or even if they want to sell them, they choose not to and start to call wholesalers that banks, some of them might have on speed dial. This way, they don't go, no one catches them going to an auction house selling a bunch of cars. Then they have to show it in the books. It's too much transparency and they don't want to do it. So they call the wholesalers, try to get the car off the lot. It is systemic in a way that banks are in there. Credit unions are like complete mess. Consumers can no longer afford it. And the student loans came at a point where it doesn't matter whether garnishments happen or the government changes its mind. It does not matter. But the second when the student loan delinquencies and defaulters were reported to the credit agencies, that's game over. Because 200 points drop is a lot. And this just going to throttle whatever left credit availability left of the consumers for the second half of 2025 and into 2026. And, you know, this is, I am afraid to say this is going to completely decimate whatever left of the middle class.
You know, you hit so many nerves with me just now with the things in your answer. You touched on so many hot topics. I don't even know where to start. This credit scores, my God, yes. I mean, 2020 happens. We give people all of this money and stimulus, and then we lock them inside. So you can't go out and spend it even if you try.
No.
And so all of a sudden, those people pay down their debt. Now they artificially look like good, responsible borrowers. They're not.
They're not.
At the same time, the student loan payments haven't been made in years, but we don't let you report it to the credit agency. So once again, these people look like good, responsible borrowers. They're not.
Yeah.
Now those things are going away, and we're seeing the rapid drop in credit scores, the biggest since the GFC.
Yeah.
And then you touched on something else there about how, you know, they're just sitting on the repossessed cars. They're not going to the auction house. I did mention attribution earlier, so I have to say, shout out to Lucky Lopez, who's a big auto YouTuber who was on this at least 2 years ago that I first saw Lucky Lopez talk about this. So he deserves credit for that.
Yeah.
But, you know, there is no held to maturity here. This is not something like, you know, a U.S. Treasury that you can sit on for 30 years and wait to get your money back at maturity. It's a rust bucket sitting in a parking lot going down in value while you're hiding it. And so these losses now, it's been a few years. You can't hide that forever like the banks did with their losses on U.S. treasuries.
Yeah.
And really what it comes down to here is we have just done a horrible job measuring and calculating risk.
Yeah.
You know, you said, why did Fifth Third go look?
Yeah.
And I guess my question is, why didn't they look sooner? Why didn't the other banks look?
Yeah. What made them look now?
What changed?
Yeah. And no one is talking about that. And that's what scares me. So, which means all the banks, almost all the banks are complicit. And there are trustees. So when a company goes straight to Chapter 7 or, you know, this company didn't even go to Chapter 11. They went straight to 7. And the banks, there are a few banks, UMB is one of them. Those banks do act as a trustees, I think, for asset-backed securities. The word is some of the bank didn't want to touch Tricolor. They rejected it. I don't know why. We are reaching out to our sources there, and we will keep everyone posted. But when a bank that does this for a living is rejecting to touch Tricolor, like, what does it tell you? They all know it. And now it's coming out. But Tricolor, if Tricolor happened and First Brands did not happen, nobody would have cared. Tricolor happened, First Brands happened. One is a consumer side ABS, the other one is a supplier side ABL. Like, everyone's guard is going to be up. Third quarter, we will know. No one will talk about it. But things are going to shift in the banks.
Yeah. Once is no, never mind. Twice is a coincidence. If there is a third, now it's a trend and everybody freaks out. And I would say, based on your research and what you told me about the workouts and the modifications and the credit scores, it stands to reason there will be a third.
Yeah.
I don't know who it's going to be, when it's going to be, but there probably will be. The situation in consumer finance is not getting better. It's getting worse.
It is.
And Lox, you were on this months ahead of anybody else. I congratulate you on that. Excellent research. Thank you for sharing your work with us. Guys, you can see Lox's work at unicusresearch.com. That's her website. She's also got an excellent Substack. I'm going to put links to both of those down in the description below, as well as her Twitter feed on X. Anything you want to leave us with, Lox? Any final words before we call it a day here?
Well, just whatever information you're hearing, just focus on the information that you're not hearing. And also question why you're hearing it now. So that critical aspect of viewing the information that you're reading, whether you're reading it on YouTube, whether you're listening on YouTube or reading it on X, just question the information before accepting the information, especially when it comes to investing.
Wise words as always, Lox. Thanks again for sharing your work. Excellent research. Guys, that's Lox Ganapathy from Unicus Research. all kinds of stuff. Links down below in the description of that. Highly recommend it. Thanks again, Lox, and everybody else. Until next time, live small and dream big.